Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Michael, now I thought you weren't supposed to be feeling so well coming into today's game.
You know, a lot of people put a lot of pressure on me, and I felt comfortable. We came in, we stuck tough, we hung right in there, gave ourselves a chance to win, and we won the ball game.
As we take a look at this replay, now you're not one to do an awful lot of boasting, but you had some boasts to make to a few Chicago writers about this series.
They say we can win in four, but we didn't win in four, we won in five. I don't care how many we won in, we won, and that's all that counts.
My last question. There's a pregame ritual that you go through. You're back in the locker room by yourself. There's a song that plays, and you said that was going to be your theme. What's that song that you listen to?
Anita Baker, Give It Your Best. Just go out and give it to y'all. We did it.
And the Big Apple waits for you.
We're going to New York, baby.
And that is the voice of CBS Sports' James Brown interviewing Michael Jordan after his iconic shot in the 1989 NBA playoffs. And this is the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, and in a moment, Armand Brody, Derek Futterman, and I will be joined by JB for a lengthy discussion about his career, the NFL today, the industry, and much more. Before we get to that, if you have not already, please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if you don't mind, leave us a review as well, preferably 5 stars, but of course it is a free country. All right, with that out of the way, let's get right to it. James Brown joined us last week for a conversation ahead of the NFL Today's 50th anniversary this weekend. Well, we are honored to be joined by one of the most familiar faces and voices in all of sports television. If you have watched any sports TV in your life, you have seen and heard James Brown of CBS Sports. And James is so generous with his time to join us today on the podcast. And I guess what I would start with is I'm not sure there's anybody in this industry who has ever had as versatile a resume as James Brown, who has been, obviously, as we know, a host on National Football League games, but also he's hosted the National Hockey League. He has been a play-by-play voice across the industry on so many different properties. He has been a sideline reporter on so many different properties. He was, believe it or not, a lot of people don't know this, and James, you might not remember it, he was the original host of NBA Inside Stuff. And you filmed a pilot to be the Ahmad Rashad before CBS lost the rights back then. He's done boxing, he's done the Olympics. And what I actually want to start out with is something that I didn't realize you had done when I found this out earlier this year. You were an NBA analyst, not just a play-by-play voice, sideline reporter, and host. You actually would analyze the games with the late Frank Lieber and then with Vern Lundquist. And when you have a level of versatility like that, is there anything in this industry that you could not do?
Wow. First of all, can I just say thank you guys so very much for having me on the show. I know that Derek Futterman had me on, I don't know, maybe a year or so ago, and it was a wonderful experience because he's so versatile and asked great questions. So John, Armand, and of course, Derek, thank you guys very much. Wow. You know, first of all, John, what homework did you do to find all of that out? And the fact, talk about being really inside. I don't know that many people knew that I was to have been the host. The working name was NBA Entertainment, and it morphed into Inside Stuff that Ahmad Rashad, the former football player, took over the basketball show that David Stern, God bless him, the NBA commissioner, had me pegged for the show. And here I am, a basketball player who's been doing football all this time. So people think that I'm an ex-football player only because I tried to really justify that I was involved in football by gaining as much weight as I have now. I'm trying to get rid of a lot of it. And Armand and Derek are losing their minds right now. But yeah, did you know what? Can I just say thank you for having done your homework that much? Because I know when I broke into the business, one of my aims was to not be, what's the word I'm looking for, colonized and only doing a given sport, which in the case of breaking into the network was doing college basketball first. When CBS got the NCAA basketball tournament contract, I believe that was back in 82, and I was still working local television at a CBS affiliate. And then, of course, the NBA, because I broke into broadcasting in earnest with the then-named Washington Bullets as an analyst. So I knew the NBA, knew all of those players because I played against many of them at the collegiate level. So that was my break-in. But I wanted to make certain that I could be well-rounded. And you mentioned Frank Gleiber. What a wonderful name. Oh, my gosh. Vern Lundquist and others told me the same thing. JB, do as many different sports as you can to show your versatility. That should equate to longevity and some opportunity to do other things like news. So, John, yes, that's been my background, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, I'm going to wrap up my answer with this. You mentioned the NHL. So I know Derek has already heard the story, but here it is. David Hill at Fox said, JB, we've done research. We're going to get the NHL contract. I'd like for you to be the studio host. And I said, excuse me? And he said, yes, I want you to be the host of hockey. Research has shown that they want to really become familiar with folks in cities, in the urban areas. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh. So I study assiduously to prepare for that. They introduced me to the national press. So all the guys are sitting back and you can tell they're skeptical. They're asking, JB, do you know what icing is? So I explain what icing is. Another guy says, JB, do you know what a two-line pass is? I explain what that is. The third guy says, do you know how they substitute in hockey? I said, yes, line shifts. I said, fellas, let's just take the veneer off the questions. I know what you're asking me and why. So let me be clear. No, hockey was not big in my neighborhood, okay? And number two, the only thing I have in common with the sport is the color of the puck. But I promise you, I will be an excellent ambassador for the sport. And not to be dropping names, but to make the point that even the biggest of stars back then wanted to see me successful in representing their sport. So people like Wayne Gretzky, Mike Modano, you name them, Brett Hull, they all took time to explain the subtleties and nuances so that I could represent the sport well. And I thoroughly enjoyed that, which is why I felt comfortable moving into news or doing any other kind of stories as well, too.
James, I want to ask about, I think we talked about this previously, but curious to hear, Xerox, you were a sales manager there for a while before breaking into sports broadcasting. So how do you kind of use that skill set today in the studio that you may have picked up?
Great question. Derek, that skill set working in corporate America in sales and sales management taught me the value of asking good questions, the value of observations. Because in sales, and although I did have a number of major accounts, I also did a lot of cold calling, knocking on people cold on their doors, going into offices cold. So it paid to be attentive to the kinds of questions, the answers that you were being given to your questions, and to use the powers of observation so as to help you gain some understanding of the likes and dislikes, the preferences of the people and the audience that you're in. That translated well in the sports arena whenever I was conducting interviews with players and or coaches to ask questions to find out what's of interest to them. Case in point, local television. Washington Bullets, analyst I was for them. I get to go and interview Kareem Abdul-Jabbar out on the West Coast, and he was about to break a record of Jerry West. And so I did my homework, calling other players, getting an idea of what he was like, watching Kareem, listening to interviews that he did, knowing how well-read he was and the kind of things that he likes to talk about. But my producer kept saying, JB, ask him the questions about being on the precipice of breaking Jerry West's record. When I did that, Kareem gave me 5, 7, 8-word answers. Succinct, almost curt, because he didn't like talking about that. He said, you know what? That's all well and fine, but I'll think about it when my career is over. However, I knew that he was a big Robert Stack fan, an actor in Airplane. When I asked him about that, fellas, the biggest smile came on his face. Kareem smiling before a game. And he gave an expansive answer. And I'm thinking, well, it doesn't take a mental giant to continue along that train of thought. But my producer got back in my ear and said, JB, go back to the Jerry West question. And that's when he became more straight-faced, 7, 8, 10-word answer. I learned a lesson there. Speak and have fun with that which is of interest to them and mix in the relevant questions for the reason we're doing it, but don't forsake finding what the hot button is that will make it a much more engaging and entertaining interview.
What was it like, JB, covering Michael Jordan in the 1980s?
Wow. Armand, let me tell you something. I knew that I was watching something special. During those games for the Washington Bullets, we did a number of Chicago Bulls games. Chicago Stadium, you could hear the balls bouncing on the floor, reverberating from the top of the stadium back. There were hardly any fans in the stadium. It was cavernous and hollow, etc. But boy, when Michael Jordan came to the team and when they started building around him, the place became packed. And I maintain, and I could be wrong, but this is my humble opinion, while he certainly brought a freakish skill set to the game with his natural talents, acrobatic moves, leaping ability, I maintain he became the best when he mastered the other fundamentals of the position that he was playing, a two guard. Yes, he could play the three, but a two guard and at times a one, but clearly a two because you couldn't stop him. He also became better when they built a team around him with Scottie Pippen, of course. He had centers by committee, John Paxson and Steve Kerr, people who could score. Michael understood the game well enough, long season, to make certain that for the first three quarters, those guys were engaged and doing damage with their scoring and what have you. Because when it came crunch time, it was about Michael Jordan time and he could deliver. But he preserved himself that way. Two, he engaged his teammates in it so that they were actively involved and doing what their skill set was. And of course, they went on to tremendous success from there. Brilliant. I'll close that story with this. When I was humbled, I think maybe 2 years ago, to get the National Emmy Lifetime Achievement Award, which was completely humbling, fellas. I never even thought that was on the horizon, nor was I aiming for that. Just wanting to do an excellent job to have my teammates, my colleagues look good. I knew that one of the most iconic interviews was of me doing the NBA for CBS and Michael Jordan hitting that iconic jump shot over Craig Elo in Game 5. Michael owns the rights to his highlights, Armand. And I called my buddy Howard White. Michael and I enjoyed a good relationship, and I asked, would you check to see if he would authorize me to use just 15 seconds of that footage and me running up to do the interview with him afterwards? Not only did Michael authorize it, he sent the best congratulations to me, and it touched my heart because that was a high point in my career. So thank you for asking about that. Yes, sir.
On the subject of the NBA, you were drafted into the NBA, which is something a lot of people might not know. You were drafted by the Atlanta Hawks. You were friends with the late, great Pete Maravich, who, of course, was the superstar of the Hawks at that time. CBS had the rights for so many years. And then right when Michael Jordan took off, you lost the rights to that. Was there ever a thought as you're watching Michael win all those championships of, man, I wish we were still covering that sport?
Absolutely. Who wouldn't have wanted that to continue? But big picture from there, John, one, my work ethic that I still maintain today came out of that disappointment of being cut by the Atlanta Hawks. I knew that I could play. My colleagues knew that I could play. Pete Maravich, God bless him, We were the best of friends. We would go and watch a lot of martial arts movies together because we both had a love of the martial arts. He was my biggest fan, and he would encourage me during training camp, saying, JB, had no idea you had that kind of talent. Keep your nose to the grindstone and it'll work out. Last cut of training camp, I got cut. I cried like a baby. Went home, hid in the house for 2 weeks because I'm thinking, I know I could play. My colleagues know, how could I get cut? And there was a guy on the team who was a first-round draft pick. There were two number one draft picks by the Hawks then. John Brown, big, strong, robust white guy from, I think, Missouri, University of Missouri, and Dwight Jones from Houston. Anyway, but so there was a Jay Brown in the box score every night. But yet I'm at home in D.C. and my buddies are asking me, how did you get home so quickly? I saw your name in the box score. But I had to let them know it wasn't me. But the work ethic that came from that was, I knew that I didn't work as hard to stay on top as I did to get to the top. And I vowed I would never allow an opportunity to pass me by that I wanted without putting in the necessary work and effort to capitalize on that. And that's the work ethic I've maintained since. So coming back home to CBS, after being at Fox as a part of that juggernaut pregame show, and blessed that they gave me here at CBS an opportunity to do a range of things across the spectrum. And it was because I never, ever took it lightly. I have maintained what I like to call a free agent's mentality, even with the guaranteed contract then, to say, you know what, I am never, ever going to rest on my laurels. And that is what drove me in terms of what I've been doing now. John, I hope I covered that question correctly there. But obviously, I would love to have been associated with the NBA. But I know those kind of things, you never can predict what's going to happen. And who would have thunk that that morphed into me being humbled? I didn't know these things, nor do I care about them from the standpoint that I'm always focused on my colleagues who I work with to make sure I set them up to look good. And that's kind of rooted in a scripture that means a lot to me, Philippians 2 and 3, which says, in lowliness of mind, esteem others more highly than yourself. So it's about my colleagues knowing the game well, knowing their strengths and weaknesses well, so as to elicit the best from them for the benefit of the show.
And to your basketball skill, you actually received a letter from UCLA when John Wooden was the coach there, and you had to go with your backup plan, which was Harvard. That's not usually the backup plan most people have, but you had to stick with Harvard because you got the UCLA letter after the fact, which I think just kind of says it all. But I did want to kind of talk a little bit about that Fox role.
Hey, John, before you ask your question, let me ask you, did you ever work with the National Security Agency, FBI agent or whatever? I have never had somebody that has dug up that kind of, oh my gosh, that is awesome, but that's true. But go ahead, I just wanted to give you credit. That's awesome.
Oh, well, thank you. But I wanted to talk just quickly about, you know, the Fox role. And obviously, you were with CBS for so many years in so many roles, but when Brent left CBS, Pat O'Brien did the NBA Finals as a host and the World Series as well. You were not getting that hosting role, that Master of Ceremonies, until you went to Fox. Was it the case that it took this kind of swashbuckling new network to put you in that bigger role to kind of make a CBS understand what you were capable of when you came back?
John, you asked some superb questions. Can I just say thank you very much? And the honest response to all of that is, that wasn't my game plan. I was back then, the first time around at CBS, one of the then young announcers who was on his way up. I actually had a boss ask me, JB, would you want the lead play-by-play role for the NCAA, or would you want the studio host role for the NCAA tournament? And I said, I'll take either one, but help me understand, why are you asking and giving me this option here? What are you thinking? And he said, well, you know what? You would be the first Black play-by-play guy, full-time number one role in either one of those roles. How would you handle that? And my answer was, I'm not sure why that's germane. I would like to think that you're even discussing these options with me because there's a level of excellence that you know that I would bring to the table. So I don't know how I can answer it other than to say I would continue the same kind of excellent effort and homework to do the job. John, I got neither job. Neither did the boss come and explain to me why I didn't. Pat O'Brien got the job, an excellent writer he was. No doubt about it. Excellent writer. He got the job as the studio host. Jim Nance, a Hall of Famer. He's been, what, it's going to be 40 years, surely. Obviously merited that number one position. He is a talent like none other, and we're the best of friends. So I got it, but there was no explanation. And you know what? I almost left the business. I was so distraught thinking that, my gosh, if I can't get a lead position in a sport that I know so well, maybe it's time for me to leave. But my sister, my daughter, and my girlfriend, now my wife of many years, said, no, you don't walk away simply because it didn't happen. There will be another opportunity to come down the road. You just need to be prepared for it. And I'm glad that they encouraged me that way. And little was I aware that it would lead to an opportunity to go to Fox to be the co-host with Terry Bradshaw for what was then and inducted into the Television Hall of Fame as the longest running number one show in its time slot, a juggernaut. Yeah, the NFC package, but they were good because of the attitude of David Hill, the CEO, whose mantra that was easily understood, which was sugarcoat the education pill. Make it fun. He did not want it sterile and formulaic. Have fun. And that we did, and they do, and it radically changed the set in terms of what studio shows were like, which gave me the opportunity, albeit when it came at Fox's time to renew my contract, and I didn't think that I was being offered what was fair, and it was before the season was to start. And I said, you know what, fellas, let's just table the negotiations. The football season is about to start. And I took a page out of Brett Musburger's handbook, and that was to do the job excellently. The rest will take care of itself. And as it turned out, during the course of the season, CBS offered me what I was looking for, and all they asked in the foreman and the person of Sean McManus, who I owe an awful lot to, the previous chairman and CEO, he said, just do me a favor. Don't use our offer to improve the offer at Fox. Make a decision based on the merits of the offer itself and what you want to do. And I appreciated him saying that. And that's how I came back to CBS.
Yeah. And I believe, James, this is season 20, if I'm not mistaken, on the NFL Today for you.
Yes, sir.
Yep, coming in 2006. How has the show evolved since that time? I know there's been some changes in recent years, but how would you say the evolution has gone throughout that time?
I think a very succinct answer would be, I'm sure all of you guys have seen many shows. There is the proliferation of talent on the set. A lot of mouths to feed in a short period of time. So my previous boss, Sean McManus, kept asking, JB, can I hear something from you? And I'm thinking, I've got so many mouths to feed here. And I'm using that in the vernacular. My colleagues who bring the insight and expertise of having been ex-players or coaches, the people aren't tuning in to hear me give, you know, whatever the game plan is, but to ask the intelligent questions and get the best out of them and also have some fun where it naturally fits. What's happened since then, at least in this show, we've gone down to a smaller number of people on the show so that the audience can hear more of their insight, get more of their personality, because I've got some brilliant guys I work with. I've got a Hall of Fame coach in Bill Cowher, who for years, Derek, has been invited to be a guest and a speaker at the Allen and Company confab of all of these CEOs and movers and shakers around the globe, because they know what he brings to the table. Nate Burleson is as gifted a talent who has both the young audience and the seasoned audience. He's glib, he's smart, and he knows the game. And now we've got Matt Ryan, who is a consummate quarterback who truly understands the game from a global standpoint and can deliver the insight in humorous but insightful fashion. I'm thrilled to be going into this season here with them, where they get a chance to showcase what they bring to the table. And what we've been doing for on social media with YouTube where we get to just ad lib extemporaneously a 7, 8, 10 minute report. Look, the old schooler here will never be confused as being hip and with it or with his finger on the pulse of what's going on today, but they are. And social media is eating it up. So I'm looking forward to more of that kind of showcasing of the talent and insight that we have with these guys.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
JB, I'd love to hear from you on a Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. Describe the atmosphere. Describe what it's like to host the NFL today and to be a part of NFL coverage with all of the plates that need to be juggled. Describe what's that like from Sunday to Sunday.
From my humble perspective as the host, my job is to be familiar and have my finger on the pulse of the big picture of the league. And on a week-by-week basis, what are the big storylines? Making sure that I understand the backstory for the teams that are going to be on our air early and late so that during the course of the day, my money is made. I love it is when the games take place because it's the drama, the best unscripted television there is, the NFL playing out, and to be able to ask the relevant questions of my guys at halftime and postgame to explain what has happened. But more importantly, the why. And then thirdly, what's the adjustment for the team that's behind? So those are three big questions or efforts that I try to make sure I'm covering well. And to be on top of that, because these guys are so gifted and they'll know if in fact you don't know the game or you're not paying attention. But one of the things I do is I do ask questions when we're watching of my guys. Shame on me if I don't, because Bill Cowher is watching the game from a coach's perspective. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a defensive-minded coach who really gets it from the offensive standpoint. Nate Burleson, the way he explains as a teacher what a wide receiver goes through in terms of breaking down the aspects of a phenomenal catch and what was considered to be a wide receiver being open at the college level where the opening might be this big, and I guess for the folks on podcast land, with about 2 feet of distance, at the NFL level, it's a 6-inch opening. You're open in the NFL, and he breaks down how these wide receivers do their job so well or what the defensive back, the secondary player, is really doing well. And then, of course, with Matt Ryan, he brings the quarterback mentality to it, and we know that this is a quarterback-driven league, and the fact that he understands that so well and engages in self-assessment before he offers his insight about the players who are playing today and the game that is so offensively focused, offensively geared, he does a superb job of delivering his insight. But that's the freshness of a guy who played 17 years in a league.
I wanted to ask a question about mentorship and kind of how people in the industry help each other out. I have a couple of specific examples. You mentioned earlier about doing the NHL and coming in as a Black announcer into a sport where people just don't assume that Black people watch the NHL. At that exact same time, John Saunders was doing the exact same role for ESPN. Did you get any kind of help from John Saunders, counsel from him, when you were coming into doing the NHL back then?
John, absolutely. I sought him out. And just to even be mentioned in the same voice as John Saunders, I don't deserve to be in that industry because, as you well know, he grew up on the sport. He knew it inside out. It was second nature to him. I remember going to do, it might have been some type of story Actually, I think I was in Canada, Toronto, to do, oh, you'll love this, to do a figure skating event. But I was watching hockey on TV. And I called John ahead of time just to have him help me know and learn how to watch the sport, what to be looking at, just like I learned from John Madden and others, God bless him. You don't always look at where the action is taking place specifically. What's happening off the puck? What's happening away from the quarterback and all? Because they're all involved in this symphony, the synchronicity necessary to be well and effective as a team. And that's what John Saunders taught me. And he was open and excited and refreshing and pouring out everything that he could for me to understand this sport. One of the big concerns when Fox had it was David Hill, to his credit, was looking at research. And allegedly, one of the reasons that hockey maybe was not as embraced in the lower 48 was because people claimed it was hard to watch it on TV to follow the puck. Yet people in Canada and where hockey was, you know, up in the Detroit, Chicago, places that had the sport, it wasn't a big deal. They could follow it well. But David Hill, to his credit, tried to work it such that he developed technically a glow puck, a glow to follow the puck. However, the technology was not perfected because the puck would be on a TV screen, maybe an inch or two ahead of the glow. And the purists hated that for sure. But it was an attempt on David's part to speak to what was, from a research standpoint, a problem. But David Hill also, I kind of digress here, David Hill also was the one who brought to the TV set the continuous score and time. And many people thought that that would be a turnoff. And now, of course, it's a staple of television. So yes, in terms of relationships across the network, cable spectrum was there because we all want to help each other. And John Saunders was superb in that regard and helping me for the purpose of being an excellent ambassador for the sport.
Now, this week 3 edition of the NFL Today, celebrating 50 years of the show, Brent Musburger is coming back in studio. What can viewers expect to see? What are you looking forward to with this episode?
Well, I'm like a big kid because I don't know exactly all of what specifically will take place. But Brent Musburger, at 87 years of age, man, he is on top of everything there is going on in the world of sports. And he's got an old newspaper man's mentality about it. He understands the subtleties and nuances. So it'll be thrilling to be there. I just wish that some of the folks who were part of that first show, Phyllis George and Irv Cross, God bless them both, and Jimmy the Greek, could be there. But Brent Musburger will hold the fort down because he's got a brilliant mind. He loves sports, and you have to be a lover of sports to still be as sharp as he is now. At our recently held NFL seminar, I was humbled to be able to interview Brent. He was a special guest by way of satellite, if you will, virtual, and I got a chance to query him in about a 3 to 5 minute session. And it was awesome because he is still as sharp as a tack. So the bottom line is, while we'll wait to see what unfolds as the producers lay the show out, one thing I can tell you is that we all better be sharp and ready because he is as sharp as a tack.
And when you look at the legacy of NFL Today, what sets the show apart against the rest of the landscape? What distinguishes the CBS pregame show from other offerings out there and makes you guys special?
I'd like to think from a corporate standpoint that we have never violated the tenet of making certain that we do make the game fun, but that we're giving the audience the very best insight there is. Because as you guys know, the audience has grown in its intelligence and understanding of the sport. So you can't feed them in the same fashion as you did way back in the day. Back in the day, we would never engage in esoterica, i.e., well, they've got 22 personnel out there, or they're running games on the defensive line. That's a little too inside. But even still today, the leadership will tell you properly for the ex-players and coaches, you can still use that kind of nomenclature, but back it up with an easily English understood, what does that mean? Games. Well, you got on the defensive line, you got the D-tackle, and both D tackles looping around to try to throw the offensive blocking scheme off with the aim of getting to the quarterback. That takes the audience to the next level. Well, the audience is already there now, so you just better be talking as if you're just sharing information at this point as compared to 50 years ago with the NFL today. You've got a very erudite audience, so don't be condescending in the way you disseminate the information. Just share it like it's a bunch of men and women sitting in the rec room or at a sports bar watching a game, and you're talking to a knowledgeable audience simply why it did work, but also give credit to the offensive end in terms of what they learned. And one of the things I've learned from a tactical standpoint, defensive coordinators, it applies to offensive coordinators as well, but defensive coordinators are some of the most brilliant minds in the business. They could be in the military as military leaders because they really do stay on top of things, not only scouting the opposition, but self-scouting as well to make certain that they can stay one step ahead of these brilliant minds around the NFL. And look, let me give credit. When I look at what the women in our business are doing, you know, way back in the day when I started, there was that inherent bias, if you will. That was real. But you can't tell me that the quality announcers that we have out there who are either sideline reporters, studio hosts, or analysts and the like, they bring a technical understanding of the game and the fun element to it as well, too. I think back to when Mary Carrillo was doing tennis with John McEnroe. And so she was one of the forerunners in that regard to show, no, please, she brought serious substance to the table. And I like to think that the audience today is much more seasoned, savvy, and understanding. Information is not unique to a given gender.
You had mentioned a couple of the folks who will not be with us, obviously Irv Cross, Phyllis George, but also your immediate predecessor on the NFL Today, Greg Gumbel. I wanted to, obviously, you know, Greg, one of the all-time beloved folks in this industry, and someone who really shares with you a very similar career arc with CBS for all of those years. Then after the NFL moves, you went to Fox, he went to NBC, and you both find your way back. Can you just talk a little bit about your relationship with Greg Gumbel over the years and your appreciation for everything that he was about?
Hey, John, can I say thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to do that? Many times folks may not hear the kind of love and respect that we have, not only for those who work at different call letters, because it's one big industry, but even more so inside the same house. When CBS lost a lot of inventory, I was, as I mentioned earlier, one of the then young announcers, but CBS was bringing on board a very talented Greg Gumbel, God bless him, from ESPN. I had been so closely identified with college basketball and basketball in general that that was kind of my thing, for lack of a better word. And when Greg was coming on, of course, he was taking over college basketball studio host and also fully capable in terms of play-by-play, as we well know. And I was really bummed from the standpoint that I was supposed to be doing the NCAA tournament selection show before my contract expired, and then I was going to be leaving. Greg Gumbel, in a business that many people think it's about crab in the barrel, if you will, you know, what about me? No, I don't care about that person over there. Give me that sliver of land. Let me take over that landscape. Greg Gumbel told management, no, it's the right thing to do to allow JB to close out his career hosting his final NCAA tournament selection show. I've never seen that kind of gratitude, graciousness, humbleness, if you will, to do that. And while he was alive, if I said that to him once, I said it to him a number of times. It spoke volumes about the character and integrity of Greg Gumbel, which is why so much of America was embracing the family from afar, because that was the character of Greg. Quick wit, great personality, quirky, had his quirks, which we all loved, Rolling Stones fan, but really a teammate extraordinaire. Thank you.
I got one more question. It's a bit lighthearted, but JP, can you share the story of you calling NFL play-by-play and noting that the ball was at the 55-yard line?
So, you know what? I guess that one will follow me for the rest of my life. But I'd like to think, since many people have heard it, I know Derek heard it from me last year, but it probably makes the point that if you are, and I'd like to think it, a hardworking personality, a team player, and you have the support of your bosses who see the improvement, that you can overcome a major mistake. So Ted Shaker, who was my boss then, said, JB, you've got a career in this business, but you've got to learn football because that's the dominant sport. I studied all offseason with Bobby Mitchell, God bless him, the Hall of Famer, who had me out at the team training camp early mornings, walking me through the basics of football. So my boss said, you're going to get a chance. We're going to give you a football game. Bone up and be prepared. And they said this, JB, don't get nervous. Focus on the basics. You've got a TV monitor up in the booth with you. The TV monitor will always have things right. It'll have the right time left in it. Don't look up at the stadium clock because it can be wrong. The TV clock is going to be right. Look at the picture. We will give things correctly to you by way of that. So I'm doing a game, and it was at Tampa Stadium. The Atlanta Falcons were there. And I go through the first half, and I'm thinking, man, football's not that difficult. Getting cocky. And that kind of complacency will lead to a precipitous slide down the abyss. So we get to the third quarter, and I'm saying, I forget the running back's name. And he said, oh, he's got the ball. He's got daylight. He's at the 40. He's at the 45. He's at the 50. He's at the 55. He's tackled at the 55-yard line. My producer gets in my ear. JP, there's no such thing as a 59-yard line. He says, go to commercial. And now I'm all shook up because he's exercised in his voice. And I'm shook up, and I look up at the clock, and I compound the mistake by saying, okay, folks, we're going to step aside and take a timeout here in the third quarter with about 8 minutes and 99 seconds left in the third period of play. Oh, my gosh. We come back from commercial break. My guy, Dan Jiggets, who played at Harvard, he played football when I was up there playing basketball. He covered for me. Folks, you may have heard JB say 8 minutes and 99 seconds left in the period to play. He just wanted to see if you could do the mathematical conversion to realize that was 9 minutes and 39 seconds left. So that was just an academic test for you. So he tried to make light of it and have some fun. But man, it wasn't fun at that time. But my bosses still gave me an opportunity. Thank God, Armand, the game was being televised. Only to the television truck in the bowels of the stadium and the local Piggly Wiggly store around the corner from the stadium. So it didn't go to the entire country with that mistake.
50 years of the NFL today, as the media landscape changes with shows kind of becoming more based in debate, the TV landscape going through these seminal changes, where do you see NFL pregame shows and the like going in the future? What are your thoughts on that potential evolution there?
Not sure that I can play clairvoyant, gosh, Derek, in terms of where it may be heading. And if it's okay, if I morph from this standpoint, but people may say, okay, you know what? That's coming from an old schooler. That's coming from somebody who believes in trying to do things fundamentally sound, but still making it fun, making it attractive. That's okay. But just like I was asked at some point today, what would I like to see different in the landscape of television, period? And it would be with respect to desiring more civility in the way we cover things. Because what we see is, and this is just a personal take on the matter, we have so many folks, many of whom who really haven't played the game understand it, because I don't see too many ex-players and or coaches coming down critically on people, but you will hear people delivering what comes off as the definitive and accurate and solo take in terms of how you ought to view a player, view a coach, view an organization, when there's so much more to that. John Madden, one of the things that I think made him so well received is he never engaged in bashing people directly. We see a lot of that today. And I'm like, really? But what he would do if somebody made a mistake on the field, Even that one instance you guys may remember trying to dust off cobwebs, I know the ex-CIA operative John would recall this, when it was Jim Everett, when he took that sack when the defensive player was coming at him, he dropped to the ground. Here's what John Madden simply said with a lowered register in the way he delivered it and obvious disappointment in his voice. And he simply said, "You can't do that. You can't do that." That was the extent of his criticism in terms of you don't fake it that way. So I just would like to see a bit more civility. I think you can still show your personality. You can still have some fun at it. But, you know, just like that poem by Theodore Roosevelt, "The Athlete in the Arena," or something close to that, they're out there delivering in a tough sport. I am not going to criticize, minimize, rebuke, you know, a scathing critique of them, because it's not really worth. They're out there. You can still be constructively critical in terms of what the play was intended to deliver and it didn't happen. But one of the reasons it may not have happened was because that defensive player read it well. He was well prepared for that and diagnosed it. Give credit where it's due without feeling it's so easy to simply criticize and rebuke somebody.
You know, it's funny you bring up Jim Everett, because of course it was Jim Rome who was mocking him to his face on the Jim Rome Show back in, I guess it was around that time in the mid-90s. So, you know, what you're talking about goes back quite a ways. I guess before I let you go, I look at some of what we see in this industry and some of the folks and their career paths, and I can't help but think that you in some ways have kind of formed the blueprint. So obviously between you and Greg Gumbel and CBS really bringing in a lot of Black talent that had not been there in the 1980s, all the way through to what you've done more recently, doing things for CBS News. I look at your colleague, Nate Burleson, and I see what he's doing in news that is so far beyond what people would have thought an NFL analyst would do 30 years ago. I look at even Michael Strahan on Fox. Do you feel in any way like you have helped form the blueprint for people to be able to do anything that they see fit in broadcasting?
If I have, I'm very thankful. That wasn't necessarily the focus, but it certainly was something that I hoped would happen by delivering the excellence of what you do. My example was Bryant Gumbel doing the Today Show. I saw what he did. My example was, and I forget where, there was one of the morning shows or even hosting an Olympics where we had some athletes in a chair. What I did have the opportunity when I mentioned Bryant Gumbel at NBC was Steve Friedman, I believe his name was the producer of the Today Show, and he brought Bryant Gumbel on. He was here at CBS News for a while, and I was doing an iteration of their Saturday news show. It was then called The Early Show Saturday, or The Saturday Early Show, and I was co-hosting that show, and I remember asking Mr. Friedman why and what did he see in Bryant Gumbel to make that move, which was kind of a landscape changing, to bring him on as the co-host with Jane Pauley. And he said, "I knew that with those who covered sports," and certainly it would speak in the case of Michael Strahan, Nate Burleson, those who played the sport, that athletes were accustomed to adjusting and adapting to maybe the unexpected. It didn't throw them off. So in a breaking news setting, they would not be rattled. They knew how to extemporaneously go about what they're doing with the information that they had. And I thought that would translate well to television. And it absolutely did with Bryant Gumbel, who was simply superb in that position, covering a range of topics. That was one of the reasons why I was excited to be a correspondent that he selected for his show, HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. That experience gave me the comfort level that when I came back to CBS, I could do 60 Minutes. I would like to have done more. They had a heavy roster at that time, but I did get a chance to do a few stories there, including the Michael Vick story, and to do what I know we had to do, which was to get the answers to the questions. No agenda here other than to pursue the answers. And I know when I did secure the interview with Michael Vick, after visiting with him in prison and knowing that the world was going after him, all the major magazine shows, I said, Michael, I want to do the interview with you for this reason. I heard you at the podium in Richmond, Virginia, prior to going to Leavenworth to be incarcerated. I heard a real remorse in your heart. And I thought I discerned a reason why that all occurred. I said, if that's the case, I'd like to do the interview. No, we're not going to pay you. And let me tell you, I understand that there are those who are saying that your agent is seeking payment for this. I said, Michael, that's the worst thing you can do. If you're aiming to get back into business, into football, and you do these interviews for pay, you're only going to get one big payday, because after that, everybody will have already heard what you had to say, and it won't pay off that sizable debt that you have. But more than that is people won't trust you because they will see that you gave an answer that was money motivated. Tell the truth. I have hard questions to ask you. And he cut me off and said, I have hard, truthful answers to give to those questions. I said, if we stick by that template, we're going to be okay. That's the reason why I don't need to do the story. I'm not looking to have my name in lights, if you will, because I got the interview. I'm simply looking for the truth. And I think I hear it in you. That's what I want to do. That's how we got the interview. Now, a little inside, because I had his crisis communication team sitting on one side, not wanting me to adjudicate this issue all over again in public when it already gone to court, I've got the 60 Minutes people sitting over here with standards that need to be met in terms of asking the questions. So I'm kind of in my first 60 Minutes story. I'm kind of trying to navigate this. And I hear from the big boss at 60 Minutes, who was watching it closed circuit feed, to say, tell JB, we can't use this. And I said, why? And he said, you didn't ask him the hard questions and he didn't give us the right answers. Tony Dungy, who was there because he was Michael Vick's counselor trying to get him back on the right track. He was there trying to help. He played football coach. He came and got on one knee in the middle between Michael and I, in between the chairs where we were being interviewed. He said, let me hear from the crisis communications team. What is your concern? Then he said, CBS, what is your concern? Then he didn't look at either side. He looked at Mike. He just said, Michael, answer JB's questions frankly and truthfully. And he wouldn't sat down. The room got quiet. That side of the story hasn't been told publicly. And when he did that, I exhaled a big sigh of relief so I could just ask him all of the hard questions and the follow-up. I'm not trying to quote unquote, please forgive the vernacular, undress him in front of people. I'm trying to get to the core of why any of this. And then he was totally honest and open about it. Fast forward, you all know because that he was honest, bunch of people out there who were dog lovers still hated him. That was an intractable group of people who weren't ever going to forgive him. But in terms of telling the truth, because what was it? I forget who it was that said this. They said, Michael, you're trying to get back in the league. Yes, the owners are going to have to believe you to see if one will give you an opportunity. But guess who's really going to make that decision? That owner's wife watching the show will say, you know what? I think he deserves a second chance. I won't divulge who, but that led to an owner convincing others he deserves a second shot, and he made the most of it. And to his credit, here's one something people may not know. He had struck a deal with the Humane Society, I believe it was, to do 2 years, like they do when they go into backwoods locations and get guys who are engaged in cockfighting and the rest to go and try to defuse that kind of a quote-unquote sport, that kind of activity. He got Michael, they did, Humane Society, to commit to 2 years, to going around in urban areas and talking to youngsters about the ills and the impropriety and the wrongness of dog fighting. He's still doing it to this day, well after those 2 years, because he was committed to doing that. That spoke to how he paid his debt to society genuinely in as much as he's still doing it.
All right. That's a great story to end on. We are so honored to have been graced with your presence. It's been a great conversation, and I'm sure that my listeners, all those folks out there who listen to this podcast, will enjoy it as well. James, thank you so much. Well, I hope you all enjoyed that conversation with James Brown. I know I certainly did. And there's a lot more where that came from. Next up on the podcast, we've got Kevin Harlan of CBS Sports, Westwood One Radio, and Amazon Prime Video. So stay tuned for that. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Armand. Thanks to Derek. And certainly, thanks to James Brown. We'll be back with more stuff down the line.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.